live in volatile, uncertain and complex times. So how do we navigate an age of uncertainty and complexity in global development? In this series, we explore the future of PARTOS, the Dutch Development Cooperation Association that brings together nearly 110 Dutch development NGOs. The podcast series is produced by Disrupt Development, the world's first post-growth innovation academy in global development. My name is Alexander Medic, the founder and innovation strategist at Disrupt Development. In this episode, we talk with Marienke van Riet about diversity and inclusion, equity and belonging. What do we mean with these terminologies in global development? How can organizations from the global north walk their talk and become more inclusive themselves? What is authentic leadership? And how can we tap into the power of social movements to decrease the growing inequalities? Marienke van Riet is a passionate change seeker with 20 years of experience in areas of diversity, equity and inclusion, inclusive economic growth, national resource governance and sexual health and rights. A geek for creative strategies, open data, inclusive governance and accountability, as in her opinion the latter two are among the key root causes of poverty, inequality and injustice. In the past 2 years, Marienke served as the director of Voice, an innovative grant facility that supports the most marginalized communities globally in their efforts to influence and access social services and political participation. So Marienke, welcome to the PARTOS Future Exploration podcast. I'm very thrilled to have you on this engagement and inclusion podcast of the PARTOS Future Exploration. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Alex, and always it's nice to see you again, but obviously also very nice to be here talking about such an important topic within our sector.
Great. So let's start, Marienke. So everywhere in the world, social cohesion in society is under pressure. Different groups are excluded in many ways, and mostly the poorest and most marginalized groups have no or limited access to, for example, healthcare, education, governance, natural resources, social services, security and justice. Let's start with some context. What are we talking about when we have conversations around inclusion in global development?
I think even when you start talking about the poorest and most marginalized, it's always important they're not a homogeneous group. And I think that's one of the changing elements within our sector, because it used to be seen as a very homogeneous group. They're not. There are many different, I mean, if you're talking about poorest and most marginalized, the lived reality of a person with disabilities is very different from an LGBTI activist. So that's already, and women and youth already also have a different lived reality than, for example, men. Mm-hmm. So that sort of heterogeneous element is really important when we're talking about most marginalized groups. But then underlying, I would like to mention four elements, because inclusion is only one element of it, and it's diversity, inclusion, equity, and also what has recently been added is belonging.
Interesting.
And I really like that spectrum. Because diversity is basically having diverse representation of groups, whether that is related to ethnicity or race or religion or gender, age, sexual orientation. If you have those different identities present in an organization, that's when you can talk about a diverse organization. But a diverse organization doesn't necessarily mean an inclusive organization. That's the next step, is to make sure that their ideas, views, and perspectives are all included, that they feel part of something. Equity is more used in the American context, I would say, than in the European context, but still important. Equity is also making sure that the underlying power structures, the policies, and the systems are addressed so that people have access to the same opportunities. And this is where it often goes wrong. You can be diverse and inclusive, but if you don't address the underlying power structures, the inclusion runs the risk of being hollow. And then belonging is the ultimate outcome. You could say that when you're talking about local ownership, that's also part of belonging, but it's a little bit broader than that. So it's an organization where individuals and innovations thrive. People are able to reach their full potential and they belong. And that's the overall outcome of that whole spectrum. Now, where we are in global development, it depends slightly on the context. If I look, for example, at the disability movement, most often led by people with disabilities, they're much further on the spectrum than, for example, general development organizations like an Oxfam or HIVOS. They may be diverse, they may be inclusive, but the equity and belonging is still a way to go.
Okay, thank you very much for providing this very comprehensive overview of what inclusion could mean. And actually what you're saying, it's much more than only inclusion. It's about diversity. It's about inclusion, equity, and belonging, which provides a much more holistic perspective to this podcast and to this theme. Very interesting. So let's have a look at, we now have an understanding of what it means, right? And mm-hmm. and what's more or less the current situation is, which is, like you're saying, different per context. Mm-hmm. Let's have a look into the future and the future uncertainties that the different civil society organizations have identified around this exactly topic of inclusion, diversity, equity, and belonging. Mm-hmm. And these organizations, they have been basically co-creating possible future scenarios for this particular topic. So what are the future opportunities when we talk about this topic? What are the future potential threats, right, when we talk about this topic? And let's start with a first very important theme that was brought up by all these different civil society members. It's about internal inclusion and diversity. So international development organizations often speak about respect for diversity and inclusion as bedrocks for meaningful aid projects and interventions. Civil society organizations in the sector advise foreign governments, local civil society organizations, and different communities in the global south to integrate inclusion strategies into policies and different agreements on national, regional, and local level. But how diverse is the sector in the global north? That's one of the points that came out and something I'm very curious of. So I did some research and basically research shows that only 32% of the civil society CSOs are women and just 3% are from Black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds, BAME. Abbreviation, how it is called. Mm-hmm. There is actually little data available on the representation of LGBTQ plus people and those with disabilities within development organizations. So without diversity in the workforce, programs themselves are unlikely to be inclusive, one could argue in this case. What are your experiences and thoughts on that, being a female leader of one of the biggest inclusion and diversity programs globally?
Yeah, I mean, we have come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. So if you look, for example, at the middle management level in a lot of I never like Global South, Global North, but just for the sake of simplicity and convenience, let's stick to those terms. The middle management in a lot of the northern-based NGOs is predominantly female, but it's predominantly white female. We're not so good on the BAME front. But then if you go up in the higher echelons, it's still predominantly male. And then I would even say for the international development organizations, if you look at the three biggest ones in the Netherlands, it's white male, middle-aged. And I often call that very pale and male. So that gives a little bit of the context. So we're not doing so well in walking our own talk, although there is change. There is change going on. If you see, for example, in recent recruitment, there's much more focus on BAME. and on recruiting a diverse workforce in the higher echelons. Organizations may do that, for example, through a headhunter. The big specialized agency in the Netherlands is Colour for People. And once you go through there, you also reach a network of that's much more diverse. So that's recruitment is often where it starts. Mm-hmm. But then if I look at, you know, within voice, we have the underlying principle, nothing about us without us. And that's a guiding anchor in everything we do. And if I look at the recruitment within voice itself, we have a coordination team, we have country teams. That's all made up of local talent. It's made up of a diverse staff. But whether we are inclusive enough, no, we also still have a long way to go. And so that sort of that value-based principle of nothing about us without us has also recently led me to a very deep reflection. A professional deep reflection, maybe also instigated by global phenomenon like Black Lives Matter, decolonizing age, shift of power. So I have recently decided to vacate my post after 5.5 years for someone from the 5 rights holder groups that Voice stands for. And I heard recently from a BAME consultant that I've taken the concept of corporate social responsibility into personal social responsibility. And I really like that concept because as long as we talk about corporate social responsibility, we have, you know, it's a little bit of the othering. Well, when you're talking about personal social responsibility, it's what you can do. And I felt I have a lot of empathy. I have a lot of affinity. I try to be an authentic leader, but my lived reality is very, very different from a woman with a disability in Kenya or from a lesbian in Nigeria. And so that sort of authentic leadership is something that I'm not able to provide. And I think is so crucial for where inclusion is going.
Wow, that's a very courageous decision, Marienke, and very much in line with your own principles and the values, but also the values and the principles of the program that you have been leading. A lot of respect for this decision. I don't think there are much leaders within the sector who are making these tough, but at the same time, very important decisions. So what I'm curious about, Marienke, is you made this decision to step down and to give mm-hmm. someone from a different background the opportunity to lead the Voice mm-hmm. program, mm-hmm. making it even much more inclusive in the leadership positions. Mm-hmm. So what have been the reactions from your colleagues or perhaps from other individuals within or outside of the sector?
Alex, it's ruffled a lot of feathers, mostly good. I think as a result of it, more discussions were triggered around authentic leadership, around walking the talk, around values. I've been invited to several podcasts, including now this one, to talk about it. It's also a scary step. Huh? I don't have anything lined up yet. So that's, you know, also somewhat intimidating. And that intimidation, I also heard from colleagues in the Netherlands. What does this mean for us? What does this mean for us as an organization if we're devolving more and more to the global south? You see that shift has already taken place in the last couple of years. You saw it with the recent round of strategic partnerships under the Power of Voices policy framework within the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs, that there's more space and there's more recognition for and incentives for moving to the global south. So I see that as part of that broader phenomenon. But it hasn't overwhelmingly positive, but also some fear in feedback that I've received.
Interesting, very interesting to hear. And I think you're a great example of a leader that is taking the necessary steps in order to make the sector more inclusive. One of the things that got me thinking when you were sharing this insight is the word intravism, which I have learned not too long ago, perhaps 6 months ago or 6 to 9 months ago, when I've read an article from Blessing Omaku.
Yeah.
And perhaps interesting to share. So she was saying that intravism involves advocating for internal policies that ensure organizations walk their talk.
Yeah.
So much of the work we do in the international development sector is about policies, but far too often the internal policies of our organizations do not match the external policies we advocate for externally.
Yeah.
We speak on panels about intersectionality, but have our gender equality initiatives designed by teams of white women.
Yeah.
We advocate for governmental transparency, but have no policies within our organization on resource allocation transparency or pay transparency. We promote social inclusion policies without having tangible diversity and inclusion policies within our own organizations. Mm-hmm. So I think you have made a very important and courageous step and have become an intravist leader, if we can call it that way. But
I think Alex, their voice, and this is what I hear from people who have worked for voice or with voice, and I hear it a lot. It's been a transformative experience for me. Not always a comfortable experience, but it's been a transformative experience because we have created spaces. We not only provide grants, but we also have a linking and learning component. And that linking and learning component is on its way to become the unique legacy of voice. And that linking and learning component has created spaces where we have been able, with the rights holders, with the partners, with the other stakeholders, to hold up mirrors to each other, but also hold up mirrors to ourselves. And to hold that mirror, to have a space where you can hold that mirror up to yourself and talk about those internal policies, those internal exclusive and internal inclusive policies, without fear, with a lot of discomfort, because those spaces can be uncomfortable, without fear and distrust. And that's where you get the most beautiful results. And I've also been going on that journey in terms of recruitment, because, as I said before, in terms of our own diverse representation, we've made a lot of steps, but we're not there yet. And one of the things recently that I've been trying to do, thanks to a great team, is to make sure that we are more inclusive in our recruitment. For example, we have someone in our team who has a mental disability.
Mm-hmm.
And that person said, I can't work 5 days a week, but I can work 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to see, okay, what can we do? So we created the dual role, which in the Netherlands you see quite a bit in the private sector, but not so much yet in the NGO sector. And now we have two people that are much more closer to the rights holder groups we serve that are also part of our internal structure. And that's really important.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think the notion of intravism is about, but also being an equitable and inclusive and diverse organization. Impressive, Marinka. Let's quickly move on to another potential opportunity or threat that has been named is increased equality. The increased inequality that could potentially have a big impact on the work of the different global development actors everywhere in the world. Examples that were shared by the different civil society organizations were the divide between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit critical. Racial inequality, gender inequality, the decolonization of aid, which is a good thing, of course. Marginalized groups speak up collectively and hold duty barriers accountable. So these were some of the notions, some of the topics that have been coming up under this theme of increased inequality. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, I see increased inequality together with the climate crisis as the biggest two challenges to humankind. And I actually think that the climate crisis has only exacerbated the underlying inequalities. So for me, those are the most critical issues that we need to address. At the same time, the increased inequality has also galvanized new groups to stand up. One could argue that the response to the increased populism and authoritarianism is the social movements, the issue-based collectives of individuals that has also taken a much higher flight, much more to the forefront. Look at in the US what has happened since Trump won the elections and then subsequently lost them. It's galvanized new actors, new players. Black Lives Matter really took on a whole different meaning and gained so much more traction. And
Please continue.
And I think within that, what you also see is that, again, looking at that principle of nothing about us without us, that new actors are coming up. And new players that are de-lived reality of increased inequality. LGBTI activists in Uganda, women with albinism in Tanzania or in the Sahel, women with disabilities who are living the intersectional or overlapping vulnerabilities. Huh? Mm. Might be age, might be gender, and might be of their differently abled. They are taking the forefront. Huh? They are like... Yeah, and if you look at the history of racial justice in the US, it's always been Black queer women who drove change. And you see that now being mushroomed to the global South as well.
Yeah, and looking at potential enabling actions that the current development actors could take, and let's say the civil society organizations in the Netherlands could take. What could be some of the enabling actions, some of the mitigation strategies perhaps that could be set in motion in order to decrease this increased inequality?
Yeah, I would say be the beacon of hope and be the leading example. So lead by example. So that, you know, if you look at shift of power, if you look at decolonization of aid, if you look at being diverse, you know, really doing that DEI principle of diversity, equity and inclusion, so that people feel belong, and that there's, it may sound very old fashioned, but I guess old things always come back when you wait long enough. It's a solidarity movement again. Mm-hmm. That's also very important. And I would say maybe also even a different definition or a different application of the word accountability, because even there it's quite a Western phenomenon, who we are accountable to. It shouldn't be donors, there should be downward accountability to the communities that we serve, horizontal accountability to the colleagues we work with, and then upward accountability to the donors that fund civil society. And yep. Even within the donors, there's an interesting trend going on, because there's a lot of disruption there within the donor world. If you look at Mackenzie Scott, who's single-handedly, without having a whole foundation to back it up, she works with a team of advisors, has given away $7 billion within 18 months.
Wow.
Yes, general strategic support for organizations, which is probably the most difficult source of funding to get access to. And Voice is a project funder, so we've never been able to you know, strategically support organizations. It's always been related to a project, but sort of, yeah. So there's a lot of disruption if you also look at the community funders that come up locally, or African philanthropy. So there's a lot of disruption going. Everything is in movement, and I think that's good.
So talking about the movement, everything is in movement, and you brought it up earlier, the rise of different social movements that have been coming up as well as an important future scenario on the social movements and how to collaborate with the and the role of the social movements. So some of the examples that that have been brought up by the civil society members was the increase of these different movements, like you already explained earlier. The responsiveness of power holders to the message of movements, but also the need to include more marginalized groups into programming, the formalization of movements, the funding even of movements, and the different type of movements. I would like to dive a little bit deeper into this notion of movements and social movements you touched upon earlier. What is your experience in the rise of these social movements? What is the potential and opportunity of tapping into the power of these social movements, perhaps?
Yeah, they're here to stay. Social movements are actually now, I would say, shaping modern democratic life more than political parties are. And I think it's also maybe a consequence of the disenfranchisement with political parties. There's such a huge distrust these days between the establishment and, you know, your average woman, man, and youth. That gap is only growing, and that's a worldwide gap. And I guess, you know, the conversation that you had last week around civic space is also an important element there, because it touches upon the core of the distrust that is reigning public life, that is going on between citizens and political parties and the government. So social movements are here to stay. I was actually living in New York when Occupy Wall Street took to the streets, a very powerful movement to take on the financial sector. It led to a lot of financial reforms in the US. If you look at Black Lives Matter, fighting against racial profiling and police brutality of African Americans, that has taken on a global phenomenon, because, you know, racial injustices are also happening on a daily basis in the global South. Look at, you know, the climate movement galvanized by Greta Thunberg, who started just by herself. If I look at Yana Mar in Senegal, if I look at the Balai movement in Burkina Faso, if I look at the movement in South Sudan to take on the political establishment, I think movements can do a lot. And they're issue-based rather than identity-based. So people of different identities can identify with that issue, and they can topple authoritarian regimes, as we've seen quite a bit in recent years.
So how can we as global development actors better tap into the power of these movements?
I think maybe it starts with listening, truly listen. And not only, you know, also listen to the underlying issues why people start a movement, because I also see somewhat of a disenfranchisement and dissatisfaction with existing civil society organizations. So that's also an important issue that needs to be discussed. Maybe a little bit more humility, so that it doesn't become about your logo or your branding or your visibility. Funding wise, it's very tricky. We've been with Invoice, we've been trying different ways of funding social movements, which often don't have the strict accountability or can't compete with those strict accountability measures that many donors have. As a sort of northern-based civil society organization, you need to be agile. You need to listen. You need to be a bit more humble, and maybe you need to adopt different accountability standards.
Yeah. Very useful advice, Marinke. So moving on from movements to leadership and what leadership actually entails within this notion of diversity and inclusion. So the question is, what is leadership according to you that nurtures diversity and inclusion in the global development sector?
Yeah, I find that's a constant exploration, an imploration. I don't think that's a word, but I think you know what I mean. It's a constant reflection that I'm making internally based on observations and things I see externally. Being a leader in the global development sector. For me, it has changed a lot, but maybe that also comes a little bit with age, and which should, in some cases, equate a bit more wisdom. It's about creating space for others to shine. And this is something I really learned within Voice. Again, it's been a transformative experience for myself too. Last year I created a hashtag called Sisterhood for Sister Good. And that to me sums it up, because I am at a phase in my career and in my life where it's no longer about me, but it's much more about the legacy that I want to leave behind. And it's a journey, yeah? It's not it's a complex journey, but I now feel responsibility to create spaces where others can shine. It's a combination of empathy, compassion, humility.
Beautiful words, and thank you for the conversation, Marinke. I have learned a lot within this time about diversity, about inclusion, equity, belonging. And I think you're a great example of a leader who is taking the necessary measures and courageous steps in order to lead by example. And hopefully many more leaders will follow your steps as well, Marinke.
Thank you so much, Alex. You make me, you paint me almost like a saint, but at the same time, I always say, I learned so much from my mistakes, and I make many that I'm willing to make a few more. So let's see where life takes me next. And thank you so much.
Would you like to learn more about Apartel's future exploration and explore how you can be involved? Check out the link in the description for more information. Are you interested in engaging in thought-provoking conversations with fellow development professionals? Then make sure to join the Disrupt Development Talk to Walk sessions every Friday, 1 p.m. Central European Standard Time. Thank you for listening to the podcast channel of Disrupt Development, the world's first post-growth innovation academy in global development. We work with leaders, nonprofits, social enterprises, corporates, international institutions, and governments to help them innovate, maximize impact, and achieve systems change.